A series on Hilchos Mukta, and we're going to move ahead. So we spoke about a couple of weeks ago who exactly instituted the laws of Mukta. You look through all the psukim in Chumash, and you do not find anywhere a reference to a prohibition of Mukta on Shabbos, of touching certain items. Nowhere does the Torah say that you're not allowed to touch something or handle it on Shabbos. So where does this come from? So the Gemara has what would seem to be a discrepancy. The Gemara in one place tells us that Mukta is not allowed to be handled, and that's something that was instituted in the days of David HaMelech. We have another Gemara which states that it was instituted in the days of Nehemiah. Now there's a major gap between the times of David HaMelech and the times of Nehemiah, a couple of hundred years. And that leads us to a problem. What exactly are we talking about? When was this instituted? The answer that was given was, it was instituted perhaps in the days of David HaMelech. It was something that did not pick up steam in the days of David HaMelech. It didn't really go, and therefore it fell apart. It's something that was not accepted. And then later on in the days of Nehemiah, they tried to start it up again. And that's really where the prohibition of Mukta came from. So we're dealing with something which is a prohibition that's only midrabanan. And you have to figure out, whenever we think about a isur derabanan, we really have to ask ourselves, what was the impetus for this isur derabanan? They didn't just wake up one day and decide, this makes sense. There was a reason why they said such a thing. So what was it that pushed them? What was it that was the catalyst for this prohibition of Mukta? I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
So what's interesting here is that the Mishnah Brura, who is usually just a commentator on the rules of the Shulchan Aruch, he just gives his comments along the way. Here, when it comes to the laws of Mukta, he gives a long introduction. Why? Because the laws of Mukta are extremely complicated. And therefore, he says, before we get into all the intricacies of Mukta, I'm first going to set up the whole picture for you, give you the categories, make you understand what it is that we're dealing with, and then we'll get into all the details. That's what I want to do today as well. We're going to talk about why it is, number one, that the Chachamim came up with this idea of Mukta in the first place. What was it that was bothering them about the way Shabbos was being observed that made them come up with this plan of instituting Mukta? So we begin with the words of the Mishnah Berurah, where he quotes from the Rambam. Look in the first entry on the source sheet. We're not going to read more than just the first paragraph on the sheet today. The rest of it is just, I thought we were going to go there, but last night after I tried it on the night shear, it didn't go over well, so we'll try it again. So,
I'm glad you use them as the guinea pigs.
I always do. You should feel blessed to come in the morning. So the Rambam writes as follows. You look in the second line of this entry in the Mishnah Berurah. The Rambam writes, Kasav HaRambam, Asru Chachamim L'taltel Miktas Devarim B'Shabbos, K'derach Shehu Osa B'chol. The Chachamim tell us that we are not allowed to handle certain items on Shabbos the way we would generally handle them during the week. And we're going to get into which items are permissible and which perhaps are not, but just in general, we know there's this idea of Mukta. U'mipnei ma nagu b'isir zeh, asked the Rambam. What made them feel the need to institute this rule of Mukta? We have enough that we have to think about on Shabbos. Without Mukta, we would have been fine. So what is it about Mukta that was so necessary to the way we keep Shabbos? Amru, says the Rambam here, it seems that he gives us four different reasons why it was necessary that Mukta be instituted. Uma im hishiru hanaviim vitzivu shelo yehei hiluchach b'Shabbos ki hiluchach b'chol. He says, number one, the Navi tells us that the way that we walk on Shabbos has to be different than the way we walk during the week. If for anybody who says the Zmiros, or who sings the Zmiros, Hiluchach Tehei Benachas. What does that mean? It means the way you walk should be different than the way you generally would walk during the week. And that's based on a Pasuk in Navi. Velo Sichas HaShabbos Kisichas HaChol. And the way we speak on Shabbos is not the way we would generally speak during the week. Shenemar, because the Pasuk tells us, Vidaber Dover. There's a way that we're supposed to use our speech on Shabbos that is not the same as it is during the week. Says the Rambam, if that is something that the Navi insists on, that the way you speak on Shabbos, the way you talk on Shabbos has to be different, Kal v'chomer, certainly, Shelo Yehei Tiltul Shabbos Ketiltul B'chol. Certainly, if the way you walk is different and the way you speak is different, then the way you handle things has to be different as well. And you cannot just pick up everything that you normally would handle during the week. And therefore, the Chacham said it would make sense that we should institute laws of Mukta which limit the amount of items and objects that you're going to be handling throughout the course of Shabbos. Kedei shelo yehei ki yom chol be'enav, in order that it shouldn't just be like another day, v'yavu lahagbiyah u'lisaken kelim mipina lapila o mibayis labayis, Take, for example, we all know, says the Rambam, we all know that we work during the week and we're busy during the week, and the weekends are very often clear in our schedule. So it's much easier for us, says the Rambam, to say, when I have to clean out my garage and I have to fix up my closet and I have to do all kinds of things in the house of organizing, it's much easier for me to say, I'll just wait till Shabbos when I have nothing to do anyway. I can't go to work, I can't be on the computer, I can't do lots of things. Why shouldn't I just use that as the day when I'm going to do all the organizing in the house? Says the Rambam, what kind of Shabbos is that going to be? What kind of Shabbos is that going to be? Are you going to go fix up your tool shed during the days of Shabbos? That's what you're going to spend every Shabbos and Yom Tov doing. Says the Rambam, what kind of Shabbos is that going to be? And because of that consideration, because of that concern, the Rambam says the Chacham had to come up with a plan. What they did was they told us, you know what? You're not allowed to handle all those things that you want to move around on Shabbos because we want you to have the experience of Shabbos. You want to organize your cabinets, your closets, you'll do it some other time. But Shabbos is not the time for it. That's reason number one, says the Rambam, why they came up with this idea. We're about seven lines down, halfway through the line. V'nimtza, would turn out, shalo Shabbos. It would turn out that you're so busy organizing everything, you had no time to rest at all. Ubadla tam shenemer b'torah l'man yanuach. After all, the Torah tells us, l'man yanuach, we have an obligation to rest on Shabbos. And therefore, says the Rambam, the only way to ensure that people are going to rest is by limiting the amount of items that they're able to get their hands on. That's number one. Number two, says the Rambam, last word on the line, v'od, kishe yivaker v'yitaltil kelim shemalachton le'iser, when you're going to be walking around the house and handling items like a hammer and a screwdriver, efshur sheyisasik b'hem ma'at v'yavu lidei melecha. As you're holding the hammer, you're going to pass by a picture that looks like it's falling off the wall. You're going to say, oh, I have the hammer anyway, I may as well bang it in. Well, that's a real malacha. So we're concerned if you're going to be holding things anyway and organizing in the house, it might lead you to do something far worse. So that's reason number two, because we're concerned that we don't want you to violate something which is going to be worse, and therefore we make a safeguard by telling you you're not allowed to handle the item at all, so you won't even be led to think of doing such a thing. Number three, the ode. He says, there are some people who are unemployed, some people who don't have a business, some people who don't go to work during the week. So we're not talking about today, where even if you don't go to work, you're sitting home and involved in malacha all week long. We're talking about in the days of the Rambam. What did somebody do if they didn't go to work during the week? They sat home and did nothing. Right? So they ate and they drank and they went out with their friends or whatever, but they weren't doing any malacha. Says the Rambam, for those people who work all week, obviously the Rambam says it's going to be noticeable that it's Shabbos because on Shabbos they're at home and they're not working. However, he says, what about all those people who have no job? What about all those people who are unemployed or who just are retired, whatever it might be, and now they're sitting home? What about their Shabbos is going to be noticeable that today is Shabbos? They're doing the same thing they do every other day, getting together with their friends, sitting at home, having a coffee. They're doing nothing different than they otherwise would do on a regular Shabbos. And the Rambam says we have this idea, what he calls a shvisa hanikeres. One requires on Shabbos to have a recognizable difference from the way they would act in the rest of the week. And therefore, says the Rambam, what are we going to do for all those people who have no way to demarcate the fact that today is Shabbos because the way they act on Shabbos is the same way they act during the week? Says the Rambam, therefore we have to come up with a plan for them. What are we going to say for a person who's sitting home all week and who's doing absolutely nothing other than just leisure time and having a wonderful time with their friends or their family? What are we going to do for them to show it's Shabbos for you as well? Says the Rambam, the answer is, we're going to limit the amount of items that you are allowed to handle on Shabbos. That was the way to make a shvisa hanikeres. Now, parenthetically, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that you see something, a novel idea from this Rambam. The Rambam made up a concept, and that is that on Shabbos you need to have a shvisa hanikeres. It has to be recognizable. It has to be noticeable to anyone that today is Shabbos. How am I supposed to do that? So said Rav Soloveitchik, this goes way beyond the laws of Muksa. The Rambam says, therefore they instituted the laws of Muksa because they wanted to make sure that universally, wherever you might be, whoever it might be that you're visiting, you will know immediately that it's Shabbos because you'll see that they're not touching certain things in the house. That will make a clear demarcation that today is not a regular day of the week. Rav Soloveitchik said it goes beyond that. For example, he said there was a shul in Manhattan that when they made early Shabbos during the winter months, and Shabbos, let's say, comes in at 4 o'clock or 4:30, so you finish davening at 5:15, But somebody who generally eats dinner at 6:30, 7 o'clock, didn't want to eat at 5:15. It's too early for them. So they had the practice in the shul was they used to have a speech right after the davening on Friday night for an hour. And then after the speech was over, everybody would talk for half an hour. By the time you got home, it was 6:30, 7 o'clock. It was closer to the time that you would normally eat on a regular day of the week. And therefore, your meals were more balanced. Rav Soloveitchik came out publicly that he thought that was not correct. He didn't think the practice was right. Because he said Shabbos is supposed to be a Shvisa Hanikeres. It's supposed to be different. So yes, you finish davening at 4:30 and you're home at 5 o'clock. You go home at 5 o'clock and you start making Kiddush. You eat. You cannot set up a system where you do everything on Shabbos specifically the way you do it during the week. Says the Rambam, that's what you're not supposed to be doing. You're supposed to set it up in a way that it's going to be different, that it's going to be recognizable. Yes, somebody who walks into my house on a regular day of the week and sees us eating dinner at 5 o'clock is going to wonder what's going on here. Somebody who walks in on Friday night now and sees we're eating dinner at 10:30, it's also very strange. The answer is, that's a Shvisa Hanikeres. It shows that Shabbos is different. And Seder of Soloveitchik, that's something that goes way beyond what the Rambam says, but he felt that that was just a very simple extension of the idea that the Rambam introduces us to. Again, if Shabbos falls out at a regular time, and it just so happens to be that the meal is at a regular time, this is not applicable. It doesn't mean you should go out of your way to make it different, but he says you shouldn't go out of your way to make it the same. That's what Rav Soloveitchik suggested.
Because you're making Kiddush and you have Mala, the way it's different.
Right.
It's
correct. Obviously, the meal is going to be different, and the nature of the meal is going to be different with the Zmiris and everything else. However, he still said that the timing of the meal should be something that should be recognizably different. Again, it's an idea that Rav Soloveitchik suggested. It's not quoted in the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't say that, but he said he felt that was just a simple extension of what the Rambam says. You can take it or leave it, but I think the idea that he's pointing out is one that's very interesting. It's one that we should at least think about, that we have to do whatever we can to make Shabbos recognizably different. So this is the introduction of the Mishnah Berurah to understanding why it was that we came up with this principle of Muktzah on Shabbos. Finally, one of the other Rishonim suggests that if you look carefully in the Gemara, it would seem that the Rambam doesn't really say what the Gemara says. The Gemara says the reason why we're not allowed to handle Muktzah on Shabbos is because we're afraid of Hotzah. We have a Malach on Shabbos of carrying outside. Well, if you limit the amount of items that someone's allowed to handle in the first place, you have less to worry about that maybe they're going to walk outside without an Eruv. So whatever the reason is, we have a bunch of convoluted reasons, but it would seem that there was a very good reason why they came up with this principle of Muktzah, and that's where we begin. So we have this idea that we're not allowed to handle certain things. What are we talking about? What is allowed to be handled, and what perhaps is not allowed to be handled? So let's begin as follows. What one is certainly allowed to handle on Shabbos is the following. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shinches, we're not going to use the source sheet anymore, we're just going to do it outside. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shinches, there are certain items that were never even on the table for discussion about whether or not they're forbidden. What are those? Number one, he says, Kisveh HaKodesh. Any Svarim, any Sefer Torah, any Navi, anything that you will learn from on Shabbos, it's certainly permissible that is not going to be subject to the laws of Muktzah at all. Secondly, says the Shulchan Aruch, Divrei Meichel, if you have a food item, and it doesn't just mean a food item that you like to eat. Let's say I don't like peanut butter, but peanut butter is an edible item that other members of my family or my friends or somebody else would eat. We're not talking about somebody in the end of the world would eat. We're talking that regular people would eat it. Something of that nature, says the Shulchan Aruch, was never in the discussion of Muktzah at all. Muktzah does not apply to any food item on Shabbos, even if I wasn't planning on having it on my menu. And then it turns out people come to visit my house and I pull it out of the closet. This is something that is not Muktzah at all. Number three, says the Shulchan Aruch, when you have clay hasuda, if you have utensils, if you have certain cutlery, things that will be used in the context of a meal, or for our own purposes of serving food on Shabbos, we assume those also were never Bechlal the Gzeira of Muktzah. Those were never included at all in the prohibition of Muktzah. Now let's begin with what perhaps would be included in the laws of Muktzah, and we'll go through it pretty carefully in order to make sure that we're not leaving anything aside. So we begin as follows. The Mishnah Berurah breaks down for us that there are four categories of what was forbidden on Shabbos. Four categories of items that were forbidden on Shabbos. Category number one, he says, is what we call Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis, which means, I have an item which is very expensive, and I'm concerned that if people are going to be handling it on Shabbos, it is going to get ruined or destroyed. Take for a very simple example. I have a violin. I don't want people handling it on Shabbos. This is why I put it away. I don't have one, but if I had one and I knew how to play it and it made a difference to me, I would put it away in a very specific place because I don't want kids jumping around all over it. It's going to be destroyed. I don't want people taking it out and touching it and looking at it and putting it back in. I don't want that. It's a very expensive item. When I have an item which is very expensive and I don't want people touching it and it has no purpose on Shabbos, something like that we assume is called Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. And therefore we assume that is considered to be off limits on Shabbos. You're not allowed to touch it, even if it's left mistakenly on the dining room table. So Erev Shabbos I was playing my violin and I put it back in the case and now I leave it on the dining room table. We come to the meal Friday night. I can't believe it. We forgot to set the table Friday afternoon. And now we come to the table and we have the violin in the middle of the table. That is an example of a case that is absolutely muktzah. You're not allowed to move it, even if it's in your way. Even if it's in your way, you're not allowed to move it. That's what we call real muktzah. That's a big problem. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you have a non-Jew around, and this is something which is in your way because you need the dining room table, and it doesn't look nice on Shabbos, and it's something that's an inconvenience to people that it's in this place where it is, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to move it off of the table and put it somewhere else. Yes?
Even if it's in the case and you're not picking up the violin, you're just picking up the case?
Doesn't make a difference. That's the same. Okay, so a violin, I assume, is something that is not relevant to most people. So what is a relevant example of something that would fall under the category of Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis? Something that is very expensive, something that is very important to me. So the common example that they give is, let's say, a passport. It's not that it's so expensive, but it's a pain in the neck to get a new one. So if my kid is going to take it and start chewing it up and throw it in the garbage and it's going to get lost, I'm not going to know where it is, and then I have a flight, it's going to be a pain in the neck to get a new one, or a license, something like that. They say for a doctor, prescription paper, that's something that's expensive, it's important to them. Legally, they're not allowed to have that lying around the house, you know, just people having access to that. Something of that nature, we assume, is considered to be Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. Because it's expensive, because it's important, because I don't want people handling it, therefore we assume that is totally off limits on Shabbos, because you have no reason to use it on Shabbos, and we assume that that cannot be handled, even if it's in your way. Even if it's in the middle of the table, you have to figure out another way to get rid of it. Now, what do I do if I have that license in the middle of my dining room table? I don't want it for the rest of Shabbos, and I don't have a non-Jew who's around to take care of it. Not everybody has a non-Jew in the house, and not everybody always remembers to remove all the items before Shabbos. So number one, we should try and remember. But what if we don't? So what do we do then? Are we stuck? Do we have to sit there the whole Shabbos and look at this thing that doesn't belong on the table? The answer is no. The answer is very simple. There are two provisions that are given to the laws of Muktzah in which we can bypass the laws of Muktzah. So when you have something such as a license or a credit card, which you don't want to lose, and it's very expensive, and it will be a big hassle for you to get a new one, therefore it falls under this category of Muktzah on Shabbos. How do I get rid of it from the middle of my dining room table? Two provisions the Gemara gives of how one would be allowed to remove Muktzah without violating the law. One is Mehatzad. One is if you do it indirectly, which means I have a folding table with a credit card on it, I'm allowed to pick up the table, even though I know that by picking up the table, this is going to fall off onto the floor, and then I can kick it out somewhere else. That is something the Gemara tells us would not be a prohibition at all. As long as you're not handling it directly, that is not considered to be a prohibition of Muktzah. So here I have our case. I have my license right in the middle of the table. I have my credit card in the middle of the table. I don't know how to get rid of it, and I don't want it on the table. I'm allowed to pick up the table to the point that this item will fall off. Okay? Now, not always is that something that is feasible, because if I have the violin on the table, I don't want to pick it up and have it fall off. So what do I do then? So the Gemara gives us a second way to get around the problem, and that is when you have tiltul baguf, that if a person is going to use a different part of their body in order to move this item, that is not a prohibition at all. And it makes a lot of sense. If the reason why Muktzah was instituted is because we're concerned that if you're going to be handling items all day long, maybe you're going to come to take the hammer and bang a nail in. Or maybe you're going to come to carry it outside. That doesn't apply when a person goes like this with the back of their elbow. It's not going to lead to something else. It doesn't apply when you pick up a table and you shake something off of it. So it makes a lot of sense, and that's where we first began with the reasons for Muktzah, because once you understand the reason, it makes sense why this application would be true. So here I have these two ways of getting myself out of the issue. So for example, the Gemara says a case of a person who has fruits, and I just happen to pick the fruits right before Shabbos, and there's so much dust, there's so much dirt on top of the fruits, and I just want to pick up the apple, and all the clumps of dirt are going to fall off. But the dirt is muksa on Shabbos. How do I do that? The answer is, that's tiltul menatzad. I'm not picking up the dirt and removing it. I'm picking up the apple, and now everything is falling aside. That is an indirect connection that I have with the muksa. And therefore, in a case like that, the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch assume that that would be permissible. Something that happens to me every so often. I have a sefer on my desk. I happen to have left a pen on the sefer because I was writing something down right before Shabbos. I left a pen on it, but now I want to use the book. So what do? Answer is, you pick up the book. The pen is going to fall off. That's not a problem. We should try before Shabbos to look out for these things, but not always do we have the opportunity to do that. And if you're stuck in a case like that, we would assume you are allowed to do that. What if the reason why I want to move it off is not because I'm interested in having my table cleared off, but rather because I don't want my kids stealing the money that was left on the chair? Right? So the only reason why I'm doing this is because I'm worried about the money, which is muktza, not because I'm worried about the ambiance of Shabbos. So in a case like that, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that that would really not be permissible. The only reason why you have a right to move things, either backhandedly or by pushing the table or moving something else, is only because you want the place where it is, or you want it's going to enhance the ambiance of Shabbos in some way. But if you're only doing it for the purpose of the muktza item itself, that would not be something that we would permit. Okay. Any questions so far? Yes.
I understand the license, but I don't know if it's just seniors or whatever. There are a lot of people, including myself, there at times, that I have taken my medical cards and left them out so that God forbid anything should happen to me on Shabbos.
Okay.
I have the cards. Is that muktza?
Is a medical card muktza? A medical card, what do you mean by that? You mean like an insurance card?
In fact, I know people that have made copies of them just to carry on Shabbos in the first, in case, God forbid, say you get hit by a car, there's no one around, you've got identification.
Interesting. Certainly, if you think that it's a danger to you, so then you have to figure out how to get around that. Maybe making a copy of it is a great idea.
Okay. I know for a fact that have made copies and carry it around, especially in a Shabbos Yom Tov, because in case anything...
case of an emergency.
Especially at night, God forbid.
Okay.
You're walking, you say you're going from one house to another, and you get hit by a car.
I think that's a great idea. To make a copy is a very good idea. One always has to be careful about an Eruv. Not every community has an Eruv, right? So we have to think about that. But that's a good point. Somebody raised a question last night. Let's say this woman said last night, one of the guinea pigs from last night, said that she has often left her keys in her purse on Shabbos. And then it comes Shabbos, and you're thinking about a million other things, and you don't realize Shabbos morning, you got to get your keys out because you want to go out of the house and you want to lock the door. So what do you do about that? I think it depends. I think since we have the ability to touch and handle muktza if it's backhandedly, you can go into the purse and backhandedly handle the wallet and the other muktza items if you're going out to get your keys. Now, it depends how many pounds of junk you have in your purse. I personally would never be able to live like that. I don't know how everybody lugs around with those things. However, if it's reasonable to assume that you can just move everything else aside indirectly to get to your keys, that I think is something that would be permissible. It could be it means taking a fork or taking something else and moving other things out of the way until you get to the bottom of it. It depends what you have in there, obviously. Yes?
So you said about money on a chair. Could you take something just to cover it so it's not being seen on the Shabbos? Or is that not?
Sure, you're allowed to do that. Yeah.
Cover it up. And a tablecloth instead of picking up the table, but a tablecloth underneath it.
Same thing, yeah. Yeah.
Flowers on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to move things?
Okay, so let's get into the next category, and then we'll talk about some of the more particulars. So category number one, I hope is clear so far. We're talking about muktza machmas chisaron kis, which means something which is very expensive, something which I don't want to lose, and if I lose it, it will be, if it gets ruined, it will be a big hassle, it will be a big expenditure on my part, We assume something like that is completely mukta, not allowed to be moved at all, unless it's by a non-Jew, or if you move it indirectly. Category number two that the Shulchan Aruch introduces us to is something which we call mukta machmas gufo. It has absolutely no purpose on Shabbos at all. For example, we're going to go through the examples that the Mishneh Berurah gives us, which the Shulchan Aruch says, he just puts it all together. I'm not going to read it inside, I'm just going to give you the list. He says, something which is not a kli, something which is not a utensil that you would use, because obviously we started off saying that any utensil that you would use on Shabbos is not mukta. And it's also not edible, because if it was edible, we said before, it's obviously not under the category of mukta either. For example, he says, avanim, stones. What are you going to do with stones? Nothing. Has no purpose on Shabbos at all. If you have a stone which is used as a paperweight, that's not a stone, that's a paperweight. If you have, let's say, my kids have a game, Mancala, I don't know if everyone knows, right? So those are, you're using stones to play the game. That's not stones that are being described here. We're talking about pebbles outside that are being used for nothing. Or the example my father always gives is, if you live in those communities where they believe that one of the great mitzvahs in the Torah is to throw stones at cars on Shabbos, so then, this is something that if they designate the stones before Shabbos in order to do that very noble mitzvah, we assume that is something that loses the status of mukta because now it has a very important purpose. That's like a paperweight, or that's like the game that you play with the stones. However, we're talking about regular stones where you go out to your backyard and you don't have any purpose for them. We assume those are not allowed to be moved on Shabbos, and I think about it often. Why? Because let's say in the front of my house, I assume in front of many people's homes, they have an arrangement of stones that looks very nice or whatever. My kids, every so often, play with the stones. It makes me crazy because you walk up to the house and you see everything's out of place. It just bothers me. It shouldn't, but it does. So sometimes on a Shabbos, you walk in and you want to just put it back in place. You have to keep in mind, you might be able to kick it back in place, maybe, but to pick up the stone and actually place it back where it belongs would fall under the category of mukta because it actually has no purpose on Shabbos. So that's something to think about. Number three, the Shulchan Aruch talks about kanim, sticks. You have no point to use the sticks for anything on Shabbos. So in a case like that, we assume as well, that's real mukta. Ma'os, money. What are you going to do with money on Shabbos? Nothing. You can't buy and sell on Shabbos, so the money is useless. The money is not anything that I can make any particular use for Shabbos with. And therefore, we assume that money falls under this category as well, since it has no purpose at all. Afar, it says if you have sand or you have dirt, that is also something that's considered to be no purpose at all. What if I have a sandbox? Well, a sandbox obviously is designated that people are going to use it. And therefore we assume a sandbox is not mukta on Shabbos because that dirt was designated for a very specific purpose. The same way that if you have a paperweight that is designated for a specific purpose, it's allowed. So if you have the sandbox that's designated for the purpose of children, that would be allowed. Then the Gemara gives the example of a mace, a dead body. So if somebody passes away on Shabbos, this is very complicated. What are we supposed to do? It's hard to say that we have no purpose for this body any longer. It's an uncomfortable thing to say. But that's the truth. What are you going to do with the body? Nothing. So that falls under this category as well. And that's why it's a big challenge if, unfortunately, somebody passes away on Shabbos. What exactly do we do? We don't want the body to decompose. Let's say somebody passes away on an early Shabbos, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when it's already after Shkia in the winter months. And now you have to wait until way after Shabbos to take care of that body. It's a challenge. It's a problem. But it's something that, on face value, we assume would be considered to be mukta. If you ever have to deal with such a thing, you have to... So a guy would be a different story. But this is, we're talking about Jews for now. So all of these items are considered to be mukta machmas gufo, and they fall under the same rules as the first category. They are not allowed to be handled, even if you have all of these items right in the middle of your table. You have stones on the table, you have a dead body in the middle of the table, or in the middle of your living room, which happens, right? You have something of that nature where you just don't know what to do. That is considered to be mukta. If you have a non-Jew, all of this becomes irrelevant because you can have the non-Jew come and take care of it. Or if you have the opportunity to move something in a fashion which is unusual, like we described before, either backhandedly or by tilting something over and then it falls off by itself, then we assume that that would be permissible. Now, it depends what you're dealing with. If you're dealing with something which is, you know, a big stone on your dining room table and by pushing it off it's going to crack the floor, that's not a good idea. We wouldn't suggest you do that because you have to be thoughtful about how exactly you're going to get rid of it. But in general, this is the assumption that we have, that one is not allowed to handle anything which has no purpose. What about if, very common example, you have broken glass? Something smashes all over the floor. Now I have no purpose, no use for that broken glass now. Isn't that muktzah? So it should have been muktzah because it should fall under the category of dirt and rocks and everything else that I have no purpose for. However, the Shulchan Aruch says the Chachamim never made their takana of muktzah. They never instituted this idea of muktzah when it's going to be dangerous in any way. And therefore we assume that that would not fall under the category of muktzah at all, even though, yes, it's true, it should have, because I have no purpose for it now. We still assume that this is something you have every right to clean up, you have every right to move out of the way, and do whatever has to be done with it, because muktzah does not apply whenever there is a sakana, which gets into the discussion about shoveling snow on Shabbos. Snow might very well be considered to be muktzah. It's a major discussion. Maybe we should assume that snow is not allowed to be handled on Shabbos because it just fell down from the sky and it's something that wasn't here before Shabbos started. A whole discussion, but if by not shoveling the snow you're concerned that somebody is going to perhaps slip and hurt themselves, one would certainly be allowed to do that and encouraged to do so, granted that you have an Eruv. If you don't have an Eruv, then you're not allowed to carry the shovel. But if you do have an Eruv, you are certainly allowed to shovel the snow because snow is not considered to be muktzah because you're concerned that somebody might slip on it. And I've encouraged many in the past to do that, either to put out salt on Shabbos or to put out or to go out and shovel it in a place which has an Eruv because your shovel.
The shovel is not muktzah.
Why would it be muktzah? Oh, so it's a good question. So let's think about it. Let's break it down. What would be the problem with a shovel? Yes, if you're concerned that someone's going to slip on the snow, it doesn't mean you should do your whole driveway just because you have the day off. But it does mean that if you think that somebody's going to slip, you should make a path. I think so. Seems that people have an objection to that. What? Oh, so salt, the question is salt permissible? You're making something melt on Shabbos, so maybe you're not allowed to use salt. I know my father has told me in the past he doesn't really see an issue with salt if you're talking about a situation where you're concerned that someone's going to slip. So if the non-Jew is shoveling the snow the same way you would shovel your snow just because people are in danger of slipping, that's permissible. I think it's not proper to have a non-Jew come and shovel the snow from your whole property just because it's Shabbos. It's not, I don't think it's the proper thing to do. But to have a non-Jew come and do it in order to save you from somebody slipping, I think, is a very important idea. Yeah.
What if you have to pay the non-Jew at the Shabbos? Is it okay even to pay?
How do you have a cleaning lady on Shabbos? Right, same. It's a question, how do you do it? But there's a way to do it the right way. Okay, so this is category number two. Yes?
So what about the concept of Amir La'akum?
What about the concept of Amir La'akum? Amir La'akum is a shear that we'll have to have in itself. What I did notice from last night is, it seems that there's a lot of Hilchos Shabbos that is very ambiguous and unknown. And therefore, I think it's a good idea for us maybe to study various areas of Hilchos Shabbos. People were asking very important questions last night about different areas. We can't discuss everything in one shiur. This is only directed to muktzah, but we can certainly talk in the future about Amir Lenachri. What about the fact that I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha for me? So how do I get around that in many different areas? How do I get around that when I have non-Jews helping me in the house on Shabbos, which is a very prevalent example? What do I do about asking a non-Jew to come shovel the snow? And I know he's going to come with a snowblower and he's not going to shovel it by himself. We have to talk about all that, but it's beyond the scope of the shiur for muktzah for today.
Now, if you set up the snow to the shovel, what if your candle falls over and catches fire on your table on Shabbos? Can you put it out?
Okay, so a candle is certainly muktzah on Shabbos.
Right.
However, if a candle falls over, so let me tell you what the Gemara says. The Gemara says if a candle falls over, and you're not afraid of anyone's lives, so you get everyone out of the house and you let the house burn down. That's what the Gemara says. However, nowadays we assume that that is not applicable. Why? Because the nature of our communities is if one house burns down, the whole community burns down and it's going to come to Sakana at some point. You might be able to wake up your whole family and get them out of the house quickly, but we all know if you don't get a fire contained quickly enough, it can be a danger not just to your family, it can be a danger to your whole block. And given the nature of communities that we have today, maybe the Gemara's case that it's describing is when you have a house out somewhere by itself and it's not going to get anywhere, and by the time it spreads, you already have the water set up and you have the fire station here. Maybe that's the case the Gemara is talking about. But today we assume, given the nature of the way that we live and the construct of our communities, we assume this would not be advisable at all. I would say to figure out how to put that out as quickly as you possibly can, because that is a tremendous sakana. Yeah. Now, if you have the ability, meaning let's say it's not a big fire, let's say it catches onto a piece of paper or something, right? And you have the ability to quickly take that piece of paper and throw it into a sink and let it go out, and you really don't have it, I wouldn't take chances. I'm just saying, if it's very, sometimes it's very obvious that nothing's going to happen if you contain it immediately. So I would say, just take it quickly, throw it into the sink, and that will be the end of it. But if you have any larger concern, you deal with it immediately. Of course, that's not we don't take chances with that. So those are the two first categories of muktzah that are not permissible on Shabbos. Number one, something which is expensive. Number two, something which has absolutely no use, no purpose on Shabbos. Number three, and now we come to the category of a kli shemelafta le'iser, something which is only going to be used generally for a purpose that is not permissible on Shabbos. For example, a hammer. I use a hammer only to do something which I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos, to bang something into the wall, that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos. So what other use do I have for a hammer? So this is what we call a kli shemelafta le'iser, something which most of the time is used to do an activity which is prohibited. And therefore, I should have said that on Shabbos you're not allowed to use it. However, if you're using it for letzarach gufo, I need it for its own usage, for something which is permissible on Shabbos. For example, I have a coconut, and the only way to crack it open, or not the only way, but the preferred way for me to crack it open is to take the hammer and smash it open. We would assume that would be permissible. So we're dealing with a category of muktzah here, which is an item that is generally only used for a prohibited purpose on Shabbos, and therefore we assume that something of that nature is considered to be permissible if you're doing it letzarach gufo, either because you need the item to use it for a permissible purpose. For example, one of the women asked last night a good question. I wasn't sure the answer, but I'm pretty sure now that I know the answer. She asked, what about taking a scissors? Right? So scissors are usually used for a prohibited purpose on Shabbos. What if there are times when I'm allowed to cut something on Shabbos? For example, to open a bag of chips or something like that, right? I'm allowed to open it as long as I'm not cutting the letter. She asked me, are you allowed to take the scissors and cut the bag of chips? I think the answer to that is yes. I don't see why it should be different than the hammer. The same way you're allowed to use a hammer to crack open a nut. I'm afraid of the girls who go to Beis Yaakov and who know the right answers. I don't know. So, am I wrong? Did you hear otherwise? Right, so I'm wondering, why should it be different than a hammer? Am I wrong? The Shulchan Aruch clearly says, if I want to use a hammer to crack a nut, that's permissible. Why would a scissors be any different? Let's say you need the scissors, right? Let's say you need it. What? What was that? To cut is a malacha, but there are times... 1 second. To cut is a malacha, korea is a malacha, that's true. Have you never cut anything on Shabbos? 1 second. You have cut things on Shabbos. Right. Right. You're saying the malacha on Shabbos is korea. You're not allowed to rip something, you're not allowed to cut. But there are times when you are allowed to cut. Right? 1 second. We're trying to figure this out. There are times when you're allowed to cut on Shabbos, right? So take those times when you're allowed to cut. If it's more convenient or it's easier for me to open it up with the scissors and I'm not going to ruin everything along the way. Sometimes you open a bag of chips, it flies all over the place. If I would just cut it open with a scissor, everything would stay in the bag, right? Why should that be different than a hammer that's being used to crack open a nut? I don't see why it should be different. It doesn't feel right, but I don't see why it's different. I think the only difference is nobody ever uses that hammer. So we never actually have the case, right?
Everyone ever uses the scissors.
I've never heard of a scissor.
I don't know why not. Maybe I'm wrong, yes. That for sure is okay. That for sure is okay. Let's say you have a chicken shears, right? So you use it to cut the chicken. That for sure is allowed. No? Why not? That's like a knife. What's the difference between that and a knife? Yeah.
It's your habit to cut open bags and chips like that. Well, usually when it's not Shabbos, you're not using the scissors.
Oh, so then you don't really need it. So then, of course, you shouldn't.
So
yeah.
It would matter what your...
Okay. So here, when we come to this category of klisha malafta le'isra, of something which is usually used for a prohibited purpose. So the rule over there is, if you're using it now for a tzarech heter, you're using it for something which is permissible, you're allowed to use it, like a hammer, for the use of a coconut. Or, number two, if you're using it, if you want to move it, letzarech mekomo. For example, I have the hammer, we were doing construction, Erev Shabbos, a nail fell out of the wall, we hammered it back in, I left the hammer in the middle of the dining room table. I don't want it on the dining room table for Shabbos. I don't want it in the middle of my living room. It bothers me for Shabbos. I don't want it on the kitchen counter. The halacha is you're allowed to move it. You don't push it off the counter, you're allowed to pick it up and move it. Why? Because there's nothing intrinsically muktza about it. It's something that's generally used for a prohibited purpose. Because the credit card and the violin is a different category. That's something that we described as muktza machmas chisaron kis. Here we're talking about something, the hammer, okay, I don't care, you know, the hammer. So something like that, we assume, what?
I have a pen on my countertop and I'm with the pen, and I don't want the pen there over Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
How am I supposed to move it?
So how would you view a pen? I don't think a pen falls into the category of a klisha malach delisir. Let's break it down. Why not? No. I don't think it falls into this third category. It's not like a hammer. It's not like a hammer.
It's intrinsically...
Because it's intrinsically muktzah. There's nothing I can ever use it for that's permissible
on
Shabbos. I don't want it on the counter. I would say you push it off backhandedly. Yeah, that's what you're allowed to do. Okay? So these are the two provisions that are given of how I'm allowed to move something which is a klisha malachta le'isr. Either because I need it for itself, for a permissible use on Shabbos, or because it's something which is letzorach makoma. I need the space. I don't want this in the middle of the dining room table. The example we gave a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about dishwashers on Shabbos was, let's say I want to put my dishes into the dishwasher on Shabbos because I don't want the dirty mess on the counter. Not because I'm going to turn it on Shabbos, of course I'm not allowed to do that, but rather because I want just to get the mess out of the way, so I want to load up the dishwasher on Shabbos, that I shouldn't have the plates all over the counter or in the sink. Now, the challenge with that is, how do I open the door of the dishwasher? Shouldn't it be muktzah? The only purpose that I have for that door is to press the buttons, which are muktzah. So how am I allowed to open the dishwasher door to load up the items inside of the dishwasher? The answer, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, is, that's called tzarech mekomo. I need that space. The same way I'm allowed to take a hammer off of the table and move it because I need to put a plate in the space, I want someone to sit here, so too, says Rav Moshe, this door is in my way. I need the space because I want to pull out the drawer of my dishwasher. And therefore, in a case like that, we assume that would not be a problem because I'm allowed to open it because that's the only way to get to the drawer. Now that it's open, I'm also allowed to close it because I don't want people tripping over it over Shabbos. I don't want to have my kitchen in a way that nobody can walk around. So that's also tzarech mekomo. I want that space again. So therefore, number one, I'm allowed to open the dishwasher to load it up. Number two, says Rav Moshe, I'm allowed to close it after I'm done because I want that space afterward. Yeah.
What if the light goes on?
Then all bets are off. Obviously, all bets are off. It's an important point you're raising. So you have to know what kind of dishwasher you have. Like the Gemara says, Lev Yodea Maras Nafsha. Only the person knows what's going on in their own house, right? So everybody has to know what's going on in their own house, and lights are something that you have to think about. Very often we have dishwashers now that are becoming so fancy that every time you open it, a blue light goes on, a red light goes on. You have to be vigilant of that. If that's the case, either buy an old one, or you can figure out how to bypass that somehow. I don't know if there's a way to do that. Yeah. So yeah, you have to think about that. So that's category number three. Hopefully so far so good. Category number four is what we call something that is absolutely permissible. However, somehow, you messed it up. How can you have done that? It's what we call a basis. A basis. Beis, samach, yud, samach. Basis. Beis, samach, yud, samach. A basis. Or a basis. Right? So what that means is a very practical example. You have some people who light Shabbos candles on a big fancy tray. So your candlesticks are muktzah on Shabbos. That's clear. That's not a question. Your candlesticks are muktzah. So how do I get my candlesticks off of the table on Shabbos? Answer is, you can't, because I can't pick them up and move them. What about those people who light the candlesticks on a tray? Now, the tray is not intrinsically muktzah. There's nothing wrong with it. Problem is, I just made it muktzah by putting my candlesticks on it. So now it has become a basis. Now it's something that is hosting the davar hamuktzah, the item that is not allowed to be handled on Shabbos. So now it too becomes muktzah on Shabbos. However, the only way around that is if you put something on top of that which is of equal or more enhanced value than the candlesticks, than the thing that is muktzah, then we assume that the tray is handling both the permissible item and the prohibited item. So, some people mistakenly think that if you put a sitter on there, that's good enough. It's not. Because, let's be honest, the value that you give to your sitter is not close to the value that you give to your candlesticks. It's just not. So, jewelry certainly would work. Jewelry certainly would work. So when Shabbos comes in, here's the story. When Shabbos comes in, it has to be that the basis, that whatever you have there underneath that's hosting the muktzah, you have to determine, is this something that is now muktzah for Shabbos, or is this something that is now permissible for Shabbos? So if I leave my diamond ring on there before Shabbos, to me that's more valuable than the candlesticks. Therefore, this is now considered to be something which is a basis, ledavar ha'aser, uledavar ha'mutter. It's something that is hosting both something that's permissible and something that is prohibited. And since they're of equal value, we assume that one outweighs the other, and I'm able to pick up the tray with the candlesticks on it and move the whole thing off the table.
Are you allowed to pick up the ring after?
Yes. Yeah, you can take the ring back after you move it. Now take, for example, a very common example. I have a drawer in my home that has all kinds of items in it. So it has pens and pencils and everything. When I pull out the drawer, I'm obviously moving the muktzah indirectly, but I'm moving the muktzah. And I know that's going to happen. What about if I need something in that drawer, like an index card? I need something, a bookmark, I don't know. I need something in there that is important to me, but I know that by opening the drawer, I'm going to move muktzah that I'm not really supposed to handle on Shabbos. So the answer is, it's the same kind of question. What value of items do you have in there? If all you have in that drawer is junk, then I assume that that's considered to be muktzah. You're not allowed to move such a drawer. But if inside of that drawer you have some things that are valuable and are permissible on Shabbos, and in the drawer you also have things that are not valuable and muktzah on Shabbos, then that is the same as the tray on the table that's hosting both your diamond ring and the candlesticks, which is permissible to move. Okay? Yeah. The table? Your dining room table, you mean?
You want to launch.
Okay.
You put the challah
first. Right.
And then you put the candlestick, and then you're allowed to move the table.
I mean, you have lots of items on the table, which are more valuable, which are...
Let's say that we just have two items. Mm-hmm. The challah and this. What's more valuable is the candlestick, right? But I didn't know that you're allowed to move it.
Correct, but I think generally when we assume this idea of basis, generally when we talk about it, it means you have to have intent that this item should be hosting the other item. That's why the tray is a very good example. The table, my intent when Shabbos comes in, is not that the whole table should become prohibited because I have the candlesticks on the table. Right? That was never anyone's intention at all. No, that's correct. But I think you have so many items that the table is used for throughout the course of Shabbos. So the table, the intention of your table was never to be a host only for the candlesticks and now invalidate the table from being moved, I think. Okay? Yeah.
Flowers?
So you have flowers in a vase and you want to move them off the table. That's permissible on Shabbos. That's permissible to move the flowers off the table on Shabbos. That's the same as, let's say, the pebbles that are designated for my children's game. So even though you have no use for them on Shabbos, but now I do have a use for them on Shabbos. That's the same thing. Yeah.
What if you have a basket, like you said, with a mixture of things,
mm-hmm.
and it hangs on a closet door in the kitchen, and you need to open that door?
Okay, so let's get into some more details here. We're going to get into more details. We're going to deal with the question. Let me just make a couple of comments. One is, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, when we say that edible food is permissible on Shabbos, one has to be careful that it's only edible food that you're handling on Shabbos. For example, something that happens in our home is, let's say we have a basket with raw potatoes, and we keep it on the bottom of a cabinet. Now, my children are very young children. Sometimes they'll play with it, and you'll take a potato out, and they'll throw it all over the floor, whatever it is, and then, you know, the parents come in, and they're not happy, and you want to clean it up, right? Well, that's mukzah on Shabbos, because a raw potato is not edible. So it's something, I think, that is relevant every so often, because sometimes you do have raw items that are not edible. We're not talking about carrots and apples and oranges. Those, obviously, you can eat the way they are. So those are edible and those are permissible. But when you have a raw item that is not able to be eaten on Shabbos, we assume that that is considered to be mukzah on Shabbos, and therefore, even if a child takes it out and leaves it on the floor, you have to somehow work around that and get it out of the way without actually handling it directly. That's issue number one. Issue number two that I think is worthy of being brought to people's attention is, in our home we have just got a new fridge and freezer. So the bottom of the freezer has a pull-out drawer, which means when you pull it out, you're pulling out all the items in the freezer. In that freezer, I assume, many people keep raw chicken and raw meat. So now on Shabbos, I want to get the ice cream out, but by doing so, I'm pulling all the chicken and meat along with me. Am I making sense? No, it's not okay. That's not okay. That's mukzah. So let's talk about it. So this presents a major problem, because the raw chicken and the raw meat is much more valuable than any ice cream you're going to have in there. Right? So we're blessed in our freezer that we have two drawers. One of them that when you pull open the freezer, the main drawer comes out with it. And then there's a second drawer, some sort of an insert that you have to pull out separately. So we make sure that in the bottom drawer that's pulled out with the opening of the freezer, not to have anything in there that is mukzah on Shabbos, because it's not exactly the same on the door. It's a question on the door. Let's say the freezer that has a door instead of a drawer, right? So sometimes you have a freezer door. Now, number one, my wife has told me in the past that it's not a good idea to leave raw chicken and meat on the freezer door, because then every time you open and close it, it can get ruined. So I've learned from my mistakes, and I would never do that again. So it's not such an issue by us. So generally, let's say you have the freezer door, and now every time you open and close the door, you have to think about what is on that door. What is on that door every time I'm opening it? Forget about the fancy freezer with the drawer that's pulling out. What about every time I'm opening my freezer door? What is on the door? Is there something that's mukzah? So if you have frozen challah in there, frozen bagels, that's not mukzah, because if you would take it out of the freezer and thaw it out, it would be edible the way it is. It's not a problem. So that's not a problem. Frozen items are not a problem. Problem is if you have frozen, uncooked items that are expensive, that's the problem. And very often I think we encounter that problem because we have chicken and meat in the freezer, and by pulling out for the sake of getting our ice cream, we're going to pull out inadvertently also that which is considered to be mukzah. Yes? Why?
Because you need the space inside the freezer.
Correct.
You need to get to it.
But this is what we call a basis ledavar ha'aser ledavar ha'muter. It's different than the dishwasher, which is not really doing anything. The dishwasher was just a klisha malachto le'iser, because the dishwasher, you just push the buttons. And whenever you have a situation like that, if it's letzorech mekomo, if you need that space, you're allowed to move it. Yes?
Isn't there a distinction between eatable and edible? For instance, fish we eat raw, meat we eat raw, chicken
probably.
Meat we eat raw? Well, sure, the ground beef that they serve in the beef tartare. Now, we eat it raw, so it is, I don't know.
So it depends. If you have a steak in your freezer.
Chicken, it's not eatable, but it certainly can be described as being edible.
Not sure I understand what it means.
You could eat it.
Can you explain it to me? I don't understand. What do you mean? If I was in Siberia and I was in a campsite, I would eat anything. I would eat human flesh, right? That's what people did. But that's not what we call normal. So it depends.
So when you say that you can't open this because it's not edible, Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting that if I were all edible, and I eat it, it's not eatable.
You cannot just be wrong the way it is.
Right. Would you be allowed to do that on Shabbos? Is that the kind of ingredients that you can put together on Shabbos? So that's called edible. That's called edible. If you have meat in the freezer, that all it's missing is some spices or whatever, some ingredients, some eggs, I don't know, and you would be allowed to make that on Shabbos, then that's called edible.
But I eat raw meat without spices, without anything.
You'll take a steak out of the freezer and just eat it?
Would I do that? No, but I'm talking about the ground beef. No spice, no nothing.
Okay, so maybe that's different.
And I'm not the only person.
Okay, so maybe that's called edible. But what I'm talking about is things that most regular people would not eat raw. I think a steak, most people would agree. Let's say hot dogs, right? I remember when I was in yeshiva, there were guys who used to go to take a hot dog straight out without cooking it. They would eat it. It was disgusting. It was disgusting. But they say, there's nothing wrong. It's cooked already. What? Right, that's what they say. It's already cooked. There's no problem. I was nauseous from seeing such a thing, but that's called edible. That's not a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have your freeze, your old-fashioned door freezer.
Yeah.
And you were grateful to put everything in before Shabbos.
Okay.
And now your ice cream is in the bag, and you might be touching the meat or the chicken and getting that. Could you take that out and move it around and put it back in?
If you do it backhandedly, if you figure out how to do it indirectly. There is a point to be aware of as well. There's a point to be aware of, and that is the Shulchan Aruch writes that klei hasuda are permissible. To use items that are going to be usable for our meals or for eating on Shabbos, that's obviously permissible. However, what if you have pots that you never use to serve food in? The only thing, or to store food in the fridge. The only thing you use the pot for, someone said last night, it's not the way we do it in our home. Someone said last night they only cook in the Pyrex. Once it's finished cooking, they take it out of the Pyrex, put it into something else, and then they wash the Pyrex in order for the next time they want to cook in it. In my house, we cook in the Pyrex and store it in the Pyrex. It sounds much easier to me. But let's say you have a situation like that. The Pyrex is only used to cook. You would never use it for anything else. Or you have a frying pan. To the best of my knowledge, nobody takes a frying pan after you finish making whatever you want to make and stores the item in the frying pan in the fridge. Nobody would ever do that. A frying pan is only used for the purposes of frying, for cooking. Since cooking is not permissible on Shabbos, says the Shulchan Aruch, that pan, that pot, is also considered to be muktzah on Shabbos. So it comes up in the following scenario. Let's say before Shabbos, you're rushing, you're trying to get everything clean. So you clean all the dishes, you leave them on the counter, and you figure, I'll put them away later before everybody comes home. It depends what kind of items you have. If you have cutlery and forks and spoons and knives and you have plates, that's not a problem because that's what we call klei hasuda. But if you have something like a frying pan, which the only use that you have for it is to cook something which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and you would never store anything in the frying pan, a person would never do such a thing. Or if you're the kind of person that would never use the Pyrex to store something in the fridge, you only specifically have it singled out for the purposes of cooking, in a case like that, we would assume that that would be something that you are not allowed to handle on Shabbos. Because that is something that is muktzah, because it has no purpose on Shabbos. So even though you wash your dishes before Shabbos and you leave it on the counter, you wouldn't be allowed to put that away because that is considered to be muktzah. I think that's a very relevant case. I see we're running out of time. I want to make one point before. Everyone can stay as long as they want to ask questions after. I just don't want to hold anyone. One point before we break is, and I call it a break because we're continuing right where we left off next week, but one final point is the Magen Avraham writes, and this is something that was raised last night as well. Magen Avraham writes, when you have something that is mechuber labayis, when you have something which is attached to the home and is not made to be taken on and off of the wall, for example, you have a grandfather clock. So yes, once a year the batteries run out or something and you take it off the wall. You have a big painting on the wall. Yes, once a year you take it off in order that your cleaning woman should be able to wipe it off or whatever it might be. But generally they stay on the wall all year long. That is considered to be something that is muktzah. So even though, let's say in my parents' home, I remember they get all kinds of gifts from people, so they have something hanging on the wall, which is, I don't know what it is, some silver something. I don't know. I forgot already what it is, but it's something on the wall. I can't remember. So I do remember over time, people have come to the house and said, oh, that's so beautiful, and they take it off the wall. They, oh, let me look at it. And they want to see the front, the back, who's the artist, right? They want to see, it's not disrespectful, they just want to look at it. The problem is, since it's made to hang on the wall and it's something that you have no intention of taking off at all, it's not something that is permissible to handle on Shabbos. And this is something to be aware of. Similarly, if you have, let's say, I know my kids like to move things around all the time, right? So they're always asking us to reconfigure their room. They want to move a dresser over here and a closet over there. They always want every the bed should be moved around. So the Magen Avraham writes as well, the Mishnah Berurah quotes it, la'halacha, let's say you have a teva gedola, you have a big closet, you have a big dresser, which the intention is that we put it here and it's going to stay here. Yes, once a year, bedikas chametz, we move it out of the way, or once a year, spring cleaning, we want to make sure that we, you know, we clean behind it, or we want to reconfigure the room, so we move it around. But generally, that's not what we do. So if my kids ask me on Shabbos, I want to reconfigure the room, and we're having a great time, and we want to move the dresser over there, or the counter over here, or we want to move something around, it's very nice that you want to have a good time. But since this is something that is not made to be moved around so much, therefore we assume that would also be under the category of muktzah, because when Shabbos came in, you had no intention at all of that being moved. Obviously, if before Shabbos you set it aside and you say, look, we love to play these games on Shabbos of moving things around or whatever it is. Happens to be I don't love that game. But if you say before Shabbos and you designate it, that's no worse than designating rocks before Shabbos for a very specific purpose that you need. Someone said to me yesterday that they have every Shabbos, they have some sort of Parsha questions games that they ask. And they said every so often in the Parsha there's something about a rock, Moshe Rabbeinu talking and hitting the rock or whatever. So they'll take a rock from outside and leave it on the table on Friday night in order to do some sort of something for their kids. Very beautiful that they're thinking so much about how to teach the Parsha to their children. But she was asking, is that something that I'm allowed to do or not? And the answer is, of course. If you set aside before Shabbos because you want to teach your children the Parsha based on this rock, that would be something that is completely permissible. So let's just quickly recap. We spoke about the reasons why muktzah might be prohibited on Shabbos. Not exactly clear. The Rambam gives us a number of reasons, but whatever the reason is, muktzah is something that was a rabbinic prohibition that came along later on in history. It's not something that you'll find in Chumash at all. Once we came up with this idea of muktzah, the question is, what falls under the categories of muktzah and what might not be included at all? Any food item, we assume, is obviously permissible. Anything that is edible is permissible. Anything that you have a use for on Shabbos, for a permissible purpose, is also going to be allowed on Shabbos. Anything that is what we call a clay hasuda is allowed to be used on Shabbos. Anything that is kisve hakodesh, says the Shulchan Aruch, anything that you can read on Shabbos and will enlighten your spirituality, we assume is permissible as well. The categories that are forbidden on Shabbos go as follows. Number one, muktza machmas chisaron kis. I have something which is very expensive, something which I don't want to be ruined. We assume something of that nature you are not allowed to move, even if it is on the middle of the dining room table. You're not allowed to move it because that is muktzah. It is something that you have blocked out of your purview for Shabbos, and therefore we assume you cannot handle it. However, the Shulchan Aruch says you are allowed to have a non-Jew move it if it is in an inconvenient place. That would be permissible. Second category that we spoke about is what we call muktzah machmas gufo, something which you have absolutely no use for on Shabbos at all. For example, eitzim va'avana v'yafar. If you have dirt, if you have rocks, if you have stones, if you have things that just you have no purpose for at all on Shabbos, we assume that would also be prohibited on Shabbos. And even if you have dirt, rocks, and stones right in the middle of the dining room table, you would not be allowed to move it. The only two ways that you can move it is if you do it either indirectly by pushing the table on its side and then it will fall off by itself, or if you move it off indirectly with a part of your body. Tilta bagufo is also going to be a permissible way to do that. Category number three that we spoke about is a kli shemelachto le'iser, which is generally considered to be a hammer that you normally use for a prohibited purpose, but here I'm using it in order to crack open the coconut. That is a case where we would say it is permissible. I was asked last night about the scissors. I think the answer should be it's permissible because I don't see why we would draw a distinction between a scissors and a hammer. I'm happy to say next week if I'm totally wrong. I will be happy to admit that. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I'm not. But I'm happy to look further into that. I believe that I should be right because I don't see why it would be different than any of the other examples. And the final, in that category, when we're talking about something which is a kli shemelachto le'iser, that is something that you would be allowed to move either letzorech gufo, because I need it for a permissible purpose. I need to use the hammer in order to crack the coconut. Or if you have letzorech mekomo, I need this space at the dining room table. I want somebody to sit there. I don't want them to sit in front of a hammer. Or even if I don't have a whole house of company, but it's just uncomfortable for me that this is sitting in the middle of the dining room table. It takes away from my experience of Shabbos that we're not going to be able to have the regular feel of Shabbos by having this item on the table. Something of that nature we would assume is considered to be a kli shemalachta le'iser, and therefore under those circumstances you would be allowed to move it directly. Now, something to keep in mind with regard to that is, let's say I have the hammer on the table and now I want to take it off because it's bothering me. Some people mistakenly think that means you pick it up and you drop it off the closest place possible where it's not in your way anymore, right? That's not correct. The Shulchan Aruch writes, you're allowed to do what we call a tiltal aruch. You're allowed to keep on carrying it until it's in a convenient place. So you don't have to take it off the table and just drop it on the floor. You're allowed to take it off the table, bring it into the kitchen, and put it in the place where it belongs, or put it in a place where it's not going to be a danger to anyone. Put it in a place where it's not going to ruin your Shabbos. It doesn't mean you take it off the table and drop it immediately right when you take it off the table. So that's something to keep in mind as well. And finally, we spoke about the category of a busis, which means when you have something which is housing an item which is absolutely mukta, so that is something that we consider to be off limits as well, unless you outweigh the value of the mukta item by putting something which is more or equal value to the mukta item that is housed on that tray. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue.